The following lecture was delivered at the 17th Annual National Jewish Retreat in Palm Desert, California, a project of the Rohr Jewish Learning Institute. We hope you enjoy it. We encourage you to visit jretreat.com for information on upcoming retreats. Rabbi Moshe Brisky now presents his lecture, Climbing Your Mountain.
I want to speak to you today about mountains. We find many references in the Torah to a mountain. It's not once, it's not twice, it's throughout the Torah we find this reference to a mountain. Our forefather Abraham was called upon by God to travel to the land of Moriah and to climb to the top of a mountain. And there he was told to offer his beloved son Isaac as a sacrifice. Of course, in the end, an angel stayed Abraham's hand. It was all a test. It was a test of Abraham's faith. It was a test of Abraham's commitment. It was a test for all ages. Some of you may have been here a number of years ago where we gave a whole talk just on that biblical story of the binding of Isaac. And we offered various different insights and commentaries. How are we to understand this very perplexing episode? Today, however, I want to focus on this one simple but noteworthy aspect of the story. Why the mountain? Why did he have to climb a mountain to do this? If Abram had to go and do this thing, why does he have to climb to get there? What is it about a mountain? Well, for one thing, when you talk about climbing a mountain, you know it's not an easy journey. Just the mere thought of climbing a mountain. You see, whereas when you're walking on a flat surface, it comes naturally to you. Battling a steep incline takes effort, takes resolve. Every step takes effort. For another, the mountaintop has this connotation of solitude, of being alone, of being removed, isolated from the rest of society. You're out there, you're up there, you're on your own. So when Abraham did what he did, he was very much alone. He didn't take out any full-page ads in the Mamre Times publicizing what he was about to do. He didn't send out a press release to the newscasters, to CNN and to Fox News to say, this is what I'm about to do. He didn't go on social media and post on Facebook or Instagram. This is where me and Isaac are about to do. We're about heading up the mountain so that I can offer him as a sacrifice. There was no live feed. There was no Zoom. He didn't tell anybody. Who amongst his contemporaries would have applauded him for this? No one. Who would admire the depth of commitment and the power of a sacrifice? No one. Who would cheer him on? Nobody. And yet there he is, waking up early in the morning, taking that lonely journey to faithfully carry out God's will. Abraham met God alone on the top of a mountain. Echad Hayah Avram, Abraham was the ultimate maverick. He was his own man. And humanity and civilization as we know it today exists because of what this one man brought to the world, because of his vision, because of his sacrifice, because he had the faith and the courage to meet God alone on the top of a mountain. As in all biblical stories, the story of Abraham on the top of a mountain is not just a story about ancient past. Every story of the Torah is talking to us. It's not just a story about an individual. The image of our great-grandfather making that climb up the mountain is my story and it's your story. It's the Jewish story. The story of the Akedah, the story of the binding of Isaac, not only applauds what Abraham did atop that mountain 3,700 years ago, but it applauds each and every single one of us who meet God alone on the top of a mountain. Those of you who step up with courage and with convictions, ready to make sacrifices in our lives, whether big or small, even when nobody out there will be singing our praises or patting us on the back for doing what we do. To meet God alone on the top of a mountain. So when it comes to Jewish practice, and you haven't been raised with Jewish tradition, you haven't been brought up with this, and you begin to discover at some point in your life what it's all about, and suddenly this thought enters your mind, consider going kosher. Checking products in the supermarket to see if it has that O and the U or the O and the K. You're trying to figure out which dish belongs in which cabinet and in which sink. You're putting labels on kitchen cabinets, dairy and meat and red and blue. Oh, this parv also, that's another drawer. Oh, this Passover dishes, that's another cabinet, another closet. And your friends and your coworkers, and especially some family members, think you've gone off the deep end. But you're at peace with yourself, because you're meeting God alone on the top of your mountain. This is your Akedah. This is your sacrifice. This is your story. When your weekend takes on a whole new meaning because you've introduced your family to the beauty of Shabbat, and you start getting used to checking your watch on Friday afternoons to make sure that you're lighting candles before sunset, or you go to synagogue Saturday morning and you discover deeper dimensions of the soul, and you may not be doing the whole nine yards just yet. You may not be totally Sabbath observant yet, but you're coming along. You're doing it step by step. And your neighbors wonder what's gotten into you. And they think it's some passing impulse. You're meeting God alone on the top of your mountain. You may have started attending Torah classes, or you wake up in the morning and you're wrapped tefillin to start your day, or you start putting up mezuzahs not just on the front door of your home, but on every doorpost in your home. Most of the people around you don't think very much of these actions. No one's pinning medals on your chest or giving you promotions for it, because it's between you and God. He sees. He knows. He celebrates your sacrifice, because he's there waiting for you on the top of your mountain. My friends, in the 40 years that I've had the merit and honor to serve as the Rebbe's emissary in the Canal Valley of California, I've seen some pretty amazing things. I've seen people who've come from virtually ground zero in terms of Judaism to embrace that inner spark of Abraham with such devotion, with such commitment. The Talmud tells us that from my teachers I have learned a great deal, but from my students far more. You see, for someone that was raised with kashrut, someone that was raised with Shabbat observance, it's not much of a sacrifice. It's conditioning. It's just the way you were raised. There's no real effort. It's just part of day-to-day life. But when an individual who hasn't grown up with it suddenly at some point midlife decides they want to take that step, that's real sacrifice. That's your binding of Isaac. That's your Akedah. That's your climb up this mountain. I remember some 25 some odd years ago, there was a family in our community who started taking that journey up their mountain, growing in their Yiddishkeit, one mitzvah at a time. And their 13-year-old son began attending a Jewish school. Not an easy transition. Going from an education for all your younger years, for your elementary years in a public school, and suddenly you're going to try to make that transition into a Jewish school. You don't know how to read that well. You don't know the Hebrew alphabet. You're not familiar with the Bible stories like everyone else in the class. You're not familiar with Mishnah like everyone else in the class. It's a hard transition. But he had this will, he had this desire, he wanted to do it. The kid's grandfather, who lived out of town, heard about this. A yeshiva boy for a grandson? Never. Not for my worst enemy. He was embarrassed by this. My grandson needs to go to an Ivy League school when he graduates high school. He needs to get into one of the best universities. Can't go to a yeshiva. This very secular, educated, wealthy grandfather was not very pleased about the news that his grandson was going to yeshiva. So he informed the family that he would be visiting, and he wants to take his grandson out for a private dinner at a fine restaurant. Naturally, our young yeshiva boy says, "It's so nice of you to come, Grandpa, but it would have to be a kosher restaurant." They went to Starbucks because Grandpa would not be caught dead in a kosher restaurant. And he began his talk by explaining, "This is such a waste of your time. Why do you want to spend so much time in archaic study when you can be spending your time in advanced education and you're going to want to get into one of the finest schools out there? And religion is nothing but a scam. Don't fall for it." He tried every one of these arguments. He tried with soft words. It didn't go anywhere. He tried with harsh words. Nothing doing. So being a man of means, he chose the universal language that everyone understands. He offered his grandson a stipend of $10,000 a month for a year if he would drop out of a Jewish school. The boy turned him down. He upped the offer. $15,000 direct deposit. It would go straight into his account every month, nothing doing. Boy turned it down. This went on and on. The negotiating went on until he made one final offer. $700,000 to be deposited in an interest-earning account that he would have access to when he turned 21 years old. The boy was 13. He did the math for him, what that $700,000 was going to turn into when he turned 21. He would be wealthy at 21 years old. All he needed to do was drop out. Now, way earlier in these negotiations, I would have taken the deal myself. The boy turned to his grandfather and he said, "Grandpa, one day you'll find out that the greatest gift is not one that you can give me or buy me. The greatest gift is the gift that God gave us both. I found this gift, and I hope one day you'll find it too." A 13-year-old kid talking like this, such clarity, such strength of conviction. That's the spirit and the sacrifice of Abraham all over again. It's the courage to walk your own way and to meet God on the top of your mountain. Now, we each have mountains to climb. We each have challenges to meet. We each have our own individual tests to withstand. And my mountain and your mountain may not be the same. We're each given our own mountains, and that's why we call it climbing your mountain. I remember hearing about this young woman who headed up a major business in New York City. The woman began attending Torah classes and studying about Jewish practice and observance, and over time, she decided to make some changes in her life, and she called the rabbi of this adult education institute, and she said, "I've made up my mind, I want to start keeping kosher. Can you come over to the house and make the kitchen kosher?" So the rabbi says, "Sure, no problem." He schedules a night. He comes in with his blowtorch and all of his handbooks, everything that he needs to go through the process. And they start talking, going through everything, what the kosher kitchen means and the separation of meat and milk and the new pots and the new dishes. And as he's talking, he notices on the counter there's this little pack of Chiclets gum. So he says, I just want to point out, by the way, chiclets is not kosher. So if we're going to go through this process, no more chiclets gum. The woman looked as if the whole world came down crashing on her head. Give up chiclets gum? I eat it every day. I need my chiclets gum. I can't go ahead with this. Without the chick, it's over. Forget it. I'm sorry. It was a mistake. Now, of course, eventually she calmed down. The rabbi told her there's many other gums that could compete with chiclets that are kosher. Maybe one day chiclets will become kosher. Things change out there. Whatever he might have said calmed her, and she ended up koshering the house. Now, I share this little story not to mock or belittle, but on the contrary. Because guess what? Everyone in this room has those chiclets gums. We each have those things that for us, it's a big sacrifice. Things that we cling to, things that we can't let go of. That's our particular test, whatever it may be. That we turn the key and we unlock the gate to finding true happiness and fulfillment in our lives when we find our mountain and we climb our mountain. I want to tell you from Charlie from Chicago. For a number of years, Charlie, like my story of the woman with her chiclets gum, started going to Torah classes, not in New York, in Chicago. And he loved the intellectual stimulation of the learning. He wasn't really motivated to do things. He was going for the intellectual gain of the class. He went 1 year, a second year, a third year, a fourth year, a fifth year. And finally, it rubbed off. And he's chatting with the rabbi, and he says, like the woman of the prior story, I've made up my mind. It's time. I want to start with one mitzvah. I want to start with kosher. It's a hard one to start with, but that's the one I want to start with. But one stipulation, I want to start tomorrow, not today, tomorrow. So the rabbi says, if you're going to do this anyway, why not start right now? If you're going to kosher, let's go kosher. No, don't push it. I need my one more night. I need my, okay. Why, indeed, did Charlie not want to start before tomorrow? Well, it's like this. Before going cold turkey, he wanted to eat one more super dog. For those of you that know, I didn't know until I read the story, Super Dog is a very popular restaurant in Chicago. They sell hot dogs, shakes, fries, none of which are kosher. It's one of the premier hot dog establishments in Chicago, and the main item on the menu is the Super Dog. And the Super Dog comes with all the stuff, everything that you can bury a hot dog in. The relish, the sauerkraut. Charlie loved Super Dog. That was his place. And he needed to say that farewell over one more Super Dog. And that's why he told the rabbi, tomorrow. So he sits in his favorite eatery, he makes his order, he has his super dog, and he begins to enjoy it. He's about to go through this process of his final dinner. Some friendly guy walks over, sits down across him, and starts a conversation. And they begin chatting, and the two realize that their children attend the same school, and they continue to talk. And at some point, the fellow says to Charlie, I see you really like the super dog. Charlie says, oh, I love it. I really love it. And he makes the mistake by saying, but the truth is, this is my last one. And the fellow looks at him and says, why? If you love it so much, why is it your last one? He's debating, do I get into this whole kosher thing? I don't really look Jewish. I'm not wearing a kippah anyway. Like, I don't want to explain kosher. And there'd be too many questions to ask. So he went a different route. economic times are tough. And we decided budget cuts, so no more restaurants. The whole family is giving up eating out, so no more Superdog for me. This fellow, his name was Scott, had so much compassion. He hears how this fellow loves the Superdog, but economic times are tough, and he can't afford eating out. He says, you know, it really breaks my heart. It bothers me that someone would have to stop eating the Superdog because of financial considerations, but it's your lucky day. I'm gonna let you in on a secret. I own Superdog. And he takes out of his wallet this card that he actually carried with him. And the card read, this card entitles the bearer to a free lifetime supply of Superdogs. You're never gonna have to pay for a Superdog, and you can come every day. Today is your lucky day. Now, he doesn't want to dig himself any deeper, so he thanks Scott for his kindness, for his generosity, and he runs right back to the rabbi, and he's upset, and he says, God is playing with me. Do you know it took me 4 years, 4 years. I've been coming to your classes for 4 years, never made a move, never changed anything in my life. 4 years listening every week. I finally decide I'm gonna do it. I ask for one more night, and now I have this. Not fear, not fear. So the rabbi says this to him, you think you just encountered a mountain that you can't climb. But the truth is, if you walk around the side of the mountain, you're gonna find that there's an elevator there waiting for you to take you straight to the top. God's not playing with you. God is showing you how much he loves you. God is showing you how much potential you have within you, what you're really capable of. He's proving to you that your commitment is even greater than you realize yourself. That even now that you have this card with you, you're going to find the strength within you to give it all up. Charlie indeed stuck to his commitment. And in time, one mitzvah led to the next mitzvah, followed by another and another. Today, Charlie's dining room table is filled with guests every single Shabbos. And those that have been for Shabbos lunch at Charlie's home will all attest to that in his dining room, he has a lot of art. But his most prized possession is this big piece of art, just all blank. But in the very center, there's a small little business card saying, free lifetime supply of Superdog. In Charlie's words, it's my constant reminder of how much God believes in me. Now, this is true in all aspects of life, not just when it comes to the ritual, not just when it comes to the spiritual. We each have our hurdles. We each have our challenges. And sometimes it really feels like an uphill battle. You ever walk up the steps of an escalator? I'm not talking about going up the steps of an escalator when the escalator is going up. When the escalator is coming down and you're trying to walk it up. And you feel like you just can't get to the top. We each have those days with that climb, with the setbacks, with the disappointments. Not every time we try to do something good, and not every time that we try to do something right do we succeed. Sometimes the initial attempt doesn't work, and we fall, and we fail, and we falter. And sometimes when we fall, it hurts. It really hurts. Those that go mountain or rock climbing will tell you that not every step results in going higher. Sometimes you slip down a notch. But even in that minor setback, it's part of the process, because life is not a straight line. and life is not a well-paved road. Judaism's view of a righteous person is not necessarily one that doesn't falter now and then. A righteous person is one who falls again and again, but gets up each time and continues the climb. So whether your particular mountain is in the arena of career, business-related matters, relationships, parents, children, friends, instead of allowing setbacks to send you hurling down the mountain, learn from the experience and use it as a springboard to catapult you to greater heights up the mountain. There's a rather strange story in the book of Genesis about Jacob. Jacob is returning home to his homeland after being away for many years. He's alone at night, and the mysterious stranger attacks him. Familiar with the story? And they wrestle. And the Torah is describing a wrestling match that's taking place. The assailant expects Jacob to be an easy victim, but Jacob won't surrender. To quote from the Torah, and he wrestled with him until the break of dawn. This wasn't a 5-minute round. This went on for hours. Jacob knew he needed to defend himself. He fought a very brave and valiant fight. And when the assailant sees that he can't overpower Jacob, he strikes him on his hip, dislocating his hip. And despite the pain, Jacob won't surrender. He won't let go. The attacker grows desperate and appeals to Jacob to release him. Jacob understands that this is no ordinary opponent, but rather a heavenly emissary. As the commentaries explain to us, it was the guardian angel of his brother Esau. So Jacob says, I will not let you go until you bless me. I want a blessing from you. And the angel says, your name shall no longer be Yaakov, but Yisrael, Israel. Ki sarisa im Elokim v'im anoshim v'tuchal, because you struggled with the divine and with man, and you prevailed. Our name Israel, Yisrael. What does Israel mean? What does it mean to be a Jew? It means that even when you're all alone, and even when it's a struggle, and even when you're wrestling, even when you're wrestling with the divine, you still hang in there. You persevere. You do the right thing. And you turn suffering into a blessing. That's the story of the Jew. We get up. We stand up on our feet. And we climb that mountain. Back in the 1960s, there was a young Jewish man living in Mexico. His name was Solomon Mizrahi. Solomon struggled desperately to eke out a living to support his family. He established a business importing coffee, which he would sell in and around Mexico. It was a tough business, it was a competitive business, and he kept hitting brick walls. He kept on the struggling, but he wouldn't give up. One day, Solomon negotiated a deal with a Japanese supplier to buy a huge amount of coffee at an incredibly low price. And this was a long-term contract. It was a great deal. It was a sweet deal. It was the deal he was waiting for. This was the big break Solomon was telling his wife, one day I'm going to make that deal. His profit margin would be huge. He would have enough to buy a home for his family, to support the family, not just for now, but for the foreseeable future. Jackpot. That night, he proudly showed the coffee contract to his wife. They celebrated. They were ecstatic. They danced the night away. That contract represented a bright new future for the Mizrahi family. Poverty days would be over for them. The next day, the Japanese supplier shows up at Solomon's office looking very somber. And he said to him, Mr. Mizrahi, I made a mistake. The price I quoted was too low. It was an error. Nevertheless, as an agent for my company, I signed that contract. You have in your hand a legal contract. And if you hold to that contract, which you certainly have the right to, my company will honor it. But as a consequence, I'm pretty sure I'll be fired. If that's what you decide to do, I don't blame you one bit. But I wanted you to know that my career would be over. Now imagine yourself in that position. Business is business, a deal is a deal. The whole new life of the Mizrahi family, you already celebrated this with your wife. You told her she could start looking for homes. It's a binding contract. It's not my fault. It's the company's problem. Solomon Mizrahi picked up the contract and ripped it to shreds without batting an eyelash. He wasn't going to move up the ladder by stepping on someone else's back. That was his binding of Isaac. That was his moment. That was his mountain. And he met God alone at the top of the mountain. Solomon's lawyer and business associates might have told him he was crazy. But I'm sure God had nachas. God was proud. And just like that, the big dream was over. Solomon Mizrahi continued to struggle, trying to generate whatever business he could. No big contracts came along, but he never looked back with regret. He knew he did the right thing, and he didn't regret it. A few years go by. That same Japanese man left the coffee company and moved to become an executive for a big electronics company in Japan. And that company, which developed cutting-edge technology in television, its television department decided they wanted to market the television sets in Mexico. And they were considering to give exclusive rights for distribution of this new product in Mexico. And without missing a beat, our Japanese friend pipes in and says, "I know a businessman in Mexico who is impeccably honest." Solomon was granted the exclusive rights. Any retail store in Mexico that wished to sell these popular TV sets can only buy it through Solomon Mizrahi. It was a gold mine, far more lucrative than the old coffee deal would have ever been. And from there, Mizrahi's reputation grew when he went on to become the exclusive distributor in Mexico for major companies such as Yamaha Pianos and Citizen Watches and others. Solomon Mizrahi eventually became an extremely wealthy and philanthropic man, supporting many Jewish organizations and worthy causes all over the world. But it began with one challenge, with one decision, with one mountain to climb. And sometimes we think to ourselves, what does it matter? To whom does it matter? No one notices. No one knows the differences anyway. You write a check to a worthy cause. We give 10% of our earnings to charity. We go out of our way to be honest and ethical in our business dealings. We behave in a moral manner, in a modest manner, even behind closed doors. We wake up 3 a.m. to nurse a crying baby or to care for a sick toddler. We eat our kishkes out trying to guide our teenagers along the right path. We take time to visit elderly parents or even a total stranger in a senior home. Who notices? Who knows about the noble and virtuous acts and shows us the appreciation we deserve? Who's cheering these efforts from the grandstand? And the answer is our biggest fan, that's who. You see, the story of the binding of Isaac is God's way of cheering all of us on when we meet God alone at the top of the mountain. When God calls out to Abraham after the binding of Isaac, and God tells him how precious this was, he's not just talking to Abraham. He's talking to each of us that faced those struggles, that climbed those mountains, that dealt with these obstacles. Years ago, the late Elie Wiesel, the famous author and Nobel laureate and spokesperson of conscience, was asked by the Dalai Lama if he could see him. He wanted to talk to Elie Wiesel. And during this meeting, Elie Wiesel asked him, "With all due respect, why was it so important for you to see me?" And the Dalai Lama answered, "Mr. Wiesel, your people have suffered a lot. And you went into exile thousands of years ago. But you're still here. My people just left our homeland. We're in exile. teach us how to survive. How? How have the Jewish people done it? How do you continue to do it? The truth is that the secret to our survival didn't begin with the events of 2,000 years ago. It began way before exile began. It began with a man named Abraham, who met God alone at the top of a mountain. And we've been meeting God on the top of our mountain ever since. Think about it. What are the odds that after all these centuries, after all the millennia of exile and persecution, we would be here, August of 2023, still here as a people, still studying from the Torah, still practicing the mitzvot that Moses told us about at Sinai in the year 2448. It's because we're a people that know that even when we struggle, and even when we wrestle, and even when we're hurt, and even when we're wounded, we somehow prevail. Yisrael, Israel, it's who we are. It's who you are. Because we never stop climbing the mountain, and we never will. In his memoir of the Eichmann trial, the Israeli prosecutor named Gideon Hausner writes that the evil Eichmann Yimach Shemoy, he took a peroiches. You know what a peroiches is? Peroiches is on the ark, there's this curtain, right, that hangs outside the ark. It's usually made of velvet with nice colors. So this evil Yimach Shemoy, this evil individual of Eichmann, took a peroiches from a synagogue that they destroyed. And they hung it at the entrance of the gas chamber in Treblinka. So not only did you have to walk into the gas chambers, but you needed to walk through the peroiches, the ark cover, that once hung in a shul. And what are the words on the peroiches? It said, Zeh hashar la Hashem tzadikim yavoy uvo. This is the gate to God. The righteous will enter it. And Hausner writes in his book, this sadistic monster wanted to taunt the Jews in their final moments of lives, to make a mockery of God, to make a mockery of humanity, to make a mockery of the Jewish people as they were led to the deaths. But you know what? We still have our peroches. We still have arks, our own kodeshes. We still have a Torah. We still have a shul. The Jewish people are still here. We got up. We never gave up. We rose up like lions, because that's the hallmark of the Jewish people, because that's what we've always been about. Eichmann and his like took my father's whole family. He took my grandparents. He took so many of your grandparents. They took our Zaydis and they took our Bubbies. They took our aunts and our uncles. They took our brothers and our sisters. And these monsters forced our loved ones to walk past this peroches into the gas chambers. They may have wounded us, but they didn't defeat us. Because we took our peroches back and we put up new arks, not one, not two, but thousands, tens of thousands. We rebuilt, we transplanted every one of those synagogues because we never stopped climbing, because we would never quit. We wrestled back. We wrestled with man, we wrestled with God, but we would never stop our climb. From every bout of adversity, we rebounded stronger than before. From every episode of destruction, we rebuilt bigger and better than before. Sure, it would have been easy to quit and to give up and to throw in the towel and to walk away. But thanks to the path paved by those first Jews in history, that's just not what we're made of. I'd like to conclude with one more beautiful story. It may sound like something out of the Dark Ages, but it actually transpired in 2007. And if I remember correctly, I first heard the story from Rabbi Moshe Kotlarsky at a JLI retreat. In Baku, Azerbaijan, there's a Jewish woman who married a non-Jew who was loosely affiliated with the Russian Orthodox Church. He was never a practicing or active member of the church, so when the woman told him that she wanted to enroll their 9-year-old daughter in their local Chabad day school called Or Avner, he said, fine, send the kid to a day school. Didn't mean much to him. As time went on, however, the man began to notice things, changes. The child would come home all animated, all excited about her Jewish studies. Her eyes would light up whenever she spoke about the holidays, about Hanukkah, about prayer, about the Torah portion of the week, which he had no idea what she was talking about. And every Friday night, she would insist on lighting a candle and making a blessing and doing this strange thing with her hands. At first, it was cute. Okay, it's a 9-year-old, and she's doing things in school, it's fine, but then she was really passionate about it, and it started bothering him. So one day he says to his wife, listen, you know, you asked me about the school, I said fine, but you didn't tell me about lifestyle changes. So if our daughter is going to be doing all these Jewish things, then she also has to be baptized by my religion. Fair is fair. Let her have both, your religion and my religion. Mother and daughter weren't happy about this, but the father drew a line in the sand. Here's the deal. Either she gets baptized and she can continue going to the school, but if you object, no, then she goes out of the Jewish school, no religious school at all. So the mother made the tough choice to acquiesce. Okay, we have a deal. As long as her daughter can continue going to the school she loves so much. And sure enough, the man makes an appointment for the following Friday afternoon with a priest of a church in a small Russian town. And during this meeting, this encounter, the priest asks the girl if she indeed wanted to become a Christian. And if she was ready to take into her heart everything that she's supposed to take into her heart. This 9-year-old girl says, no, I'm a Jew. At which point, her father gave her a stern look and said, you better get with the program, or you're not going to be in that school anymore. From that point on, she kept silent. There were prayers she needed to recite. She said whatever the priest told her to say. She went along with it. She was dunked in the water. She went, let herself go. As this was all going on, there was this tremendous sadness about her. The mother saw it. The mother picked up on it. And the priest starts going through all the rest of the rituals. The little girl begins playing holiday songs in her mind just to keep her mind occupied. Her mental singing was interrupted when the priest gave her a final instruction. As a sign now of your acceptance of the church, you need to go over to that table and light a candle. This brave 9-year-old child looks up at the clock. She walks over to the wall. She covered her eyes, and with everything she had inside her, she cried out, Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu melech ha'olam asher kedishanu b'mitzvos v'tzivanu lahadlik ner shel Shabbos Kodesh. It was Friday. She was lighting a candle. In a strange place, but she was lighting a candle. And she made her blessing in this church. I don't believe she got much applause from the priest. I don't believe her father was pleased. But on that Friday night, in a Russian Orthodox church in Azerbaijan, she met God alone on the top of a mountain. My friends, when we read about Abraham walking up that mountain, we're reading about this girl in Azerbaijan. We're reading about our aunts and our cousins who walked into a gas chamber at Treblinka proclaiming Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. We're reading about Jacob wrestling with an angel. We're reading about Solomon Mizrahi tearing up that contract. We're reading about Charlie and Super Dogs in Chicago. We're reading about a woman in New York giving up her Chiclets gum. We're reading about a 13-year-old boy saying thanks but no thanks to his grandfather's pot of gold. We're reading about each and every single one of you in this room who, with no one applauding or admiring your efforts, make sacrifices big and small. Sacrifices for Judaism, sacrifices for your family, sacrifices for your friends, and sacrifices for total strangers. You climb your mountain and you meet God alone on the top of your mountain. You know, we often speak about the importance of community and of joining a congregation, of worshiping as a group, and in many of the talks that I'm going to give, I will be emphasizing that. And indeed, it's of paramount importance in Jewish life to belong, to be part of a community, to be part of a congregation. But I also think that every once in a while, it might be a good idea to have some solitude as well. To spend some quiet time alone, without cell phones, without computers, without televisions, even without people around you. Pretend there's no one else in the world at the moment, just you and God. Nobody to impress, nobody to imitate, no one to appease. No politically correct or incorrect positions. You and God. Think deeply about your inner truths, your beliefs, your fears. Think about your particular challenges, the personal challenges that you're going through. Think about your mountains, because we each have our own unique ones to climb. And we're each given the strength to climb that unique mountain. The strength is there. It's in you. But you need to make the move. You need to start the climb. And maybe you won't reach the peak right away. And maybe it looks invincible. And maybe you're afraid of heights. I want you to trust me on this. You're no different than everyone else in this room. Because you see, we're each afraid of climbing our own mountain. It's easy to climb someone else's mountain. It's easy to think about what someone else has to do. And sometimes you wonder, why do they struggle so much with it? It seems so easy. Focus on your own mountain, on that which you need to climb. If the struggle in your life is within the home, if the marriage is in desperate need of attention and repair, make that your mountain to climb. Don't walk away. And if your mountain is not within your control to change, whether it's health or economic hardships or a need for a shidduch for yourself or for a child or for a grandchild, or you're in need of a miracle, of an open, revealed, godly miracle, whatever area of life distresses you, that weighs you down, have that conversation with God. Speak to Him. Use real words and sounds, a real conversation. Share your tzaras, or your grievances, or your hurt, or your anger, but allow there to be room for healing, for reconciliation, and then get on that mountain and climb. There was a woman named Zoe Kaplowitz who ran a New York City marathon. Marathons are 26 miles. Zoe Kaplowitz couldn't run. Zoe Kaplowitz could hardly walk. She had crutches. Zoe Kaplowitz had muscular dystrophy. And she was determined that somehow she was going to make it through 26 miles. The race was long over. And after some 20 hours of walking, one step at a time, one step at a time, and for the last mile, literally dragging her right leg in her hand, Zoe Kaplowitz passed the finish line. She finished last, but she finished first in the hearts of everyone in New York. Such determination, such courage. Zoe Kaplowitz was asked, why did you do it? Why was it so important? And she said, sometimes in life, you're sitting on the couch and the television goes static. Those of us from the older generation remember those antennas. Today, kids would not know what static even means. And it goes staticky. You have two choices. You can sit there and watch static. Or you can get up from the couch and change the channel. My commitment to myself is that I will get up every day and change that channel. We need to take on the Zoe Kaplowitz challenge. We can sit there, we can look at the mountain, we can say we can't climb it. It's too hot outside, it's too cold outside, it's raining outside, I don't like climbing anyway. We have every excuse in the world to stay on the couch. Or we can get up, get out there, look for your own unique mountain, and start that climb. And there's where you will meet God alone, on the top of your mountain. Thank you very much. Tomorrow I'm going to be speaking on the subject of Do You Believe in Angels? I look forward to seeing you.
Please visit myjli.com to learn more about JLI's multiple educational offerings.